Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. A few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. I'm Eric Pennington, and joining me is Jeff East. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, Eric. Excited about today's episode.
Yeah. So with us today, we have Jeremy Jensen, who is actually a returning guest. He was on the podcast maybe close to three years ago. I think it may be more two. And Jeremy is the chief of police for the Dubuque Police Department, Police Force. I probably have just butchered that terribly, Jeremy, but welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jeremy, some things have changed since the last time that you were with us. Before you were the assistant chief in the Dubuque department, and now you are the chief. I'm not sure if you like me saying it like that, the chief, but you are now the chief of police.
I guess there's only one chief, so I guess so.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
We'd like to congratulate him on that.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations, and we're happy. And one of the things for our audience as a refresh, Dubuque as a city is a bit different than many cities in the United States, and their embrace of emotional intelligence and the work they have done and the work they are doing. So certainly, I think as we go along in this episode, and if you'd like, you can also go back to our library if you want to get sort of the past look. But I want to jump right. Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I met Jeremy in, was that Arlington, Virginia, or
Boston?
Boston. Okay, Boston at an EQ conference, and that was pre-COVID. So was that 2019, something like that? And that was that's you guys were at the very beginning of your EQ journey, I believe, at that time.
I lost the audio, guys.
Well, that's okay. So Jeff, go ahead and just repeat that for Jeremy.
All right. We met originally in Boston at a EQ conference, and I believe that was at the very beginning of the city's EQ journey. Yep. There were yourself, and I know I can't think of his name.
Rick Palmer.
Okay.
Lieutenant, yep.
And then somebody from the utilities area?
University of Dubuque. So Dr. Liza Johnson, and then they brought...
There was another woman with you from, I think, the utilities department or water.
So she was with actually wastewater. Yeah.
Okay.
Nancy Knipper.
Yep. So that's when I got to know Jeremy and his cohorts, and still excited about the idea of a city doing what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, if you can look back over 2023, how has EQ impacted the department? And you can speak at a high level or even more personal as it relates to your team.
Well, it's interesting. And I kind of back this up because my team, you know, we got into the EQ in 2018. It is really when we really started getting into the whole EQ umbrella. We did some personal empowerment and some other things before that. But, you know, we're looking at then, it's like, I think this should take off and we should do this in law enforcement. And this is a good idea. And quite honestly, almost any leadership training in law enforcement now that comes out has an EQ component to it, or there's special. So it's kind of like, okay, so being a little bit ahead of the game. So we've been ahead of it. And so in 2023, we really started looking at organizational culture stuff. using EQ. So we use EQ as an umbrella for a lot of things. You know, de-escalation became very popular in 2020, and departments and states requiring that as part of training. And honestly, de-escalation is under the EQ umbrella. And the one point that we're, you know, we're talking with our officers about is you can't de-escalate if you're escalated. You know, so using the EQ side of that, using that, you know, knowing themselves, how they manage themselves, you know, we throw mindfulness into that. So to try to get their heartbeats down. So in 2023, we've done a lot with this. We're actually trying to, we actually do it as part of our hiring process too. So we do an EQ assessment as part of the hiring. In the state of Iowa, they have to do a psychological exam, which gives them, okay, this is what's going on in your life. Well, we're using the EQ side of that and the EQ assessment to actually say, how are they managing that? Or are they capable of managing that? Or what tools do they need to manage this? The areas that they're showing up in that. So that's been pretty successful for us. So early on, our officers are getting this, this idea about emotional intelligence, emotional regulation, emotional hijacking and all that.
Yeah. So would you say that that now, it sounds to me like it's now a part of the culture of what your department is?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when you got it in a culture is when you got people using buzz phrases that you use. So I use name it to tame it a lot, you know, and when we're talking about and as a culture thing, being able to say, you know, hey, when you did that, it made me feel like this, right? Or if you don't let the stress build up, name it to tame it. And I hear somebody walking down the hall, hey, name it to tame it. So then I know we're getting it into the culture side, even if they don't really know it's EQ. But that's what, for me, that's the win. That's when we're starting to see the change.
So do you find that that is a contributor to maybe how you guys interact with the community as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because if you think about it, you know, self-awareness, you know, what am I bringing to the table? What, recognizing what my own emotions are, you know, for years in law enforcement, and I assume it's other jobs too. I only know law enforcement, but they would teach, you know, turn it off when you go home, turn it on when you, you know, come back into work. I mean, that's such a lie. You know, it's like, where's that switch? Because I really would like one. If you can get it installed when you go home, that'd be awesome. But, you know, and so to recognize that you maybe are at an emotional level that's elevated, you know, when you come into work and even more importantly, because now we're getting to officer wellness on the psychological side, which is, you know, the peer support and that kind, not just the physical side, but the peer support and having your coworkers recognize when you're at an elevated level and say, you know, intercede before something bad happens. Because when something really bad happens, generally in law enforcement, it's because an officer has been emotionally hijacked. You see that, this emotional level, and it's not calm, cool, and collected. I mean, that's just plain and simple. I mean, stress raises it, and then, you know, and you see when things go bad, it's just because you're operating under that stress level with tunnel vision and not thinking, you know, clearly, and having your coworkers be able to step in, which is the duty to intervene that you see in a lot of states as law now. But it really starts with that. You have to recognize it and be accepted that your coworkers are going to come in and interject and say, hey, I got this. It's not a knock on you. I get it. You're stressed out. Let me handle it. So,
yeah. And Jeremy, that's really good, because I asked you that question that way, because I know some might listen to you and go, well, that's great that their department is so emotionally intelligent. It's great that they do these things, as if you guys were just a police department that doesn't have anything to do with the community. But that's where the sort of the rubber meets the road, right?
Yeah, it really is. Because you can never forget in law enforcement who you really work for, right? You really work for the citizen, and you don't work for the chief or the city manager or the city council. You really work for the citizens, and safety isn't just about numbers. Safety is also about perception. And with the public doesn't trust the police department to do, or law enforcement in general, to provide safety for them. And it requires us to use emotional intelligence in how we interact. Again, not bringing this, I had a bad day at home and I brought this into now your bad day, and it made the situation worse. So,
right.
You know, I think you mentioned the citizens feel safe with the police department, or do they ever feel danger? I think that has something to do with it, because I know there's a lot of people when they see police, that's a danger sign for them.
Yeah. And so I think in a broad, again, I use EQ as an umbrella, and I don't think people see it as how broad EQ really is, because, you know, I teach my officers, not, you go introduce yourself. You want to be on a first name basis with everybody, because that starts the trust level, right? The safety thing, you know, I don't feel safe with the police, but if I go in and say, hey, I know Jeremy, you know, they don't see me as a police officer, they know me as Jeremy. And then that starts that level that we can have a dialogue. And again, we're not, we're not into this great amount of stress when we're talking, because we're now on a first name basis. We have, and I want my officers to have that too. I don't want this officious side. I mean, there's times we have to use our authority, right? But we don't have to be officious about that. We can go in and say, you know, and again, use EQ and use empathy. You know, that's a accountability and empathy, you know, they're not contradictory to each other. They complement each other, actually. And that's the one area that, you know, teaching what empathy really, really means, particularly in policing and in law enforcement.
So, Jeremy, I'm curious, because I'm thinking right now about the Columbus Police Department, obviously a large metropolitan city, and then even the suburban departments, right? Dubuque is not a large city, but at the same time, it's not a village by any stretch. I guess I wonder, for those out there that might say, well, hey, in a large metropolitan police department, when you have an interaction with the community, you're not going to be on a first name basis. And, you know, you've got to be X or you got to be Y. But then I start thinking, well, could the interaction start with, and I'm going to just go at it from my vantage point as a citizen, so what's your name? Or is it okay if I ask you what your name is before any dynamic occurs? Is that kind of the flow, or does it work a different way? Because I think that's a very powerful approach to be on a name basis with anybody.
So, well, one thing, you know, we're teaching this, and again, not everybody does it. You know, Academy will teach you to show up and say, my name is Officer Jensen, and mm-hmm. I introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Before I ever ask anybody name, and this is part of the EQ side that I've learned, I say my name first. Hi, I'm Jeremy. And it takes some of that, again, depending on the situation. I mean, there's stress situations where this goes.
Yeah, yeah, totally get that.
I mean, for the most part, to do that with people that probably do have a distrust of police for various reasons, but to do that and say, I'm Jeremy. And, you know, even in my own self, and you know, I'm the chief, I'd prefer to be Jeremy than the chief, you know? And so when I talk to people, because my background is communication and background is understanding power dynamics, right? As soon as I introduced myself to my chief, I just introduced a power dynamic. But yeah, if I'm Jeremy, I'm Jeremy, you know, and that's part of that. And you talk about big cities, and I have not worked in the big city, but I know you still people, you interact with the same people. You work a precinct, you work an area, you work a territory, you know the people. That's part of policing. You know the people in your area, right?
Yeah.
And you started with that. And, you know, even the people we arrest, though, I mean, if you're using EQ for the most part, and there's some people it won't work, but they'll be like, you know what? I know you had to arrest me. You treated me fairly. And again, you're back onto that. Or they'll ask for a certain officer. Can they have them arrest me? Because you know, because of that. So I think it can work. Anything. Because it starts with the individual.
Yeah.
You want organizations to buy into the culture of it. But you can do that individual work. Even if your organization doesn't buy into it.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And Jeff, and I know you probably have some thoughts on this too. I guess I look at it and go, you know, we're not doing this podcast to give out silver bullets that will fix things and solve things, right? We understand that there, I mean, especially when you're talking about a large metropolitan area, the dynamics are, you know, they can be very complex. But I mean, to your point, Jeremy, right? Even if you're an individual officer where EQ is not even discussed, you could do something with it, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And if you go in, you know, like that, from those interventions, and then introduce stress, I mean, even the mindfulness stuff, and as you start to work that, you know, I don't want to be at 190 beats a minute. You know, I'd like to be that where I'm thinking more clearly. And, you know, there's a number of things, pursuits, you know, just use of force incidents. You know, you go to the domestic and you get the call that, you know, a gun's displayed and you're going into, you don't know what you're walking into. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff where you can start to use this and just to make yourself more healthy and more safe, you know, and it's, and ultimately downstream side of that is your interaction with the public is not, you're not into this, you know, you're not emotionally hijacked. You're not stuck in the, and this is one thing in police work that we, our go-to move for years was, if you don't listen, you're going to jail. Why? Because I don't know how else to de-escalate it, to solve it, to resolve it. And so we did that. I'm guilty of the same thing. That's what we're talking, you know, yeah, well, you're going to go to jail. Because I don't know what else to do. Now we're learning that we can work our way through this. You know, even in Dubuque, like you said, we're not that big. We're fairly busy. You know, you're going back-to-back calls. It used to be taught to us to literally just handle a call and get done. So you tried to shortcut everything you could to get done and get to the next call. Well, now it's like we want our officer to spend time because there's a factor. So I spend time now on this. I spend 20 minutes with, historically, I've been 5 minutes. Maybe the next time I deal with them, the situation is not 20 minutes. Now it's 5 minutes because we've already developed this. I took more time up front. So I think it averages out. I think it, again, the public, it builds trust. It builds a perception of, no, you're not here just to police me, but you're here to work with me. So,
yeah.
My wife and I, when it was originally Live PD, now it's On Patrol Live. I don't know if you've ever watched any of those.
I don't watch police shows.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's like Cops, but it's live. Yeah. And they follow it, and I can see some of these officers. They're from, like, I think 9 or 10 different departments now, and I just wonder. I don't know if any of those departments are using emotional intelligence or not, but I see some of the officers, because you see them week after week if you watch this show, that they do it naturally.
Yeah,
and just to see the difference on how they handle things.
It's taught more, I think, in just in life, you know, in schools and stuff. I mean, the DARE program and some of the social emotional intelligence stuff that they're building into that now. So it's not a foreign concept, you know, to come in. They may not know they're doing it. Or they don't know it. They ain't going to call it EQ, but they de-escalate. They're using EQ. I mean,
I see the situation they're in and I'm going, how do they stay that calm? Mm-hmm. You know, I would want to be smacking somebody if I was there. And I think that's an important thing to think about with police
officers. There's power in the recording. You know, we record ourselves now pretty much, you know, on everything mm-hmm. we do. But there's some power in that too, because it's the ability for us. We know we're being recorded, you know. So there's a little bit of accountability for that. But the other side of it is, I know if I go to court and I handle it very calm and collected, and, you know, and I show that video and somebody's upset, you know, I mean, you have this whole different dynamic. So you have it saying, wow, the cops really did handle that well. And I look really good because I handled it well. I kept control. You know, the ones we see in that gets in to hit national news is when it's not that, when it's seen they're out of control or something like that. And that's when you see that. And so, but 99% of the time we totally are, and we know that. And so, again, we're human. We get emotionally hijacked. I mean, there is things that will hijack us. And so we're trying to build the checks and balances into that to, A, move it from the subconscious to the conscious thought, you know, get that, the emotion reaction to that. And B, having our peers be able to say, hey, I notice you're, let me step in.
I like how you integrated that in the department, because I think having that level of care and sort of the accountability mixed in from peer to peer is powerful. I also want to touch on something you mentioned, bringing in mindfulness, and this is not a direct to mindfulness, but I do believe it connects. I know for me, I have found in the last year doing a lot more work with breath work, right? The breathing thing. Because you mentioned, you know, 190 beats per minute type thing. And I do believe there is something when you can build sort of a practice around, like in getting that calmingness or the calmness into your interactions. And I'll confess, Jeremy, when I first, like, I think it was, I can't remember where I actually first kind of got the tip about, hey, if you work on your breathing, it can do something for, I think it was blood pressure. I think that's what the subject matter was.
Can I say something about that real quick, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. I monitor
my blood pressure 2 or 3 times a week. And doing the deep breathing, if it's showing high, knocks about 15 points off for me.
Well, and Jeff, that's one of the things that I have found in this year as well. It does have a direct correlation to those numbers from blood pressure. But I got to imagine, Jeremy, if I know I'm going into a tense situation, be it you mentioned a domestic call or something of that nature, if I can get in front of that with the calming part, then do I increase the chances that the interaction will not be as fraught with fill in the blank? Is that some of what you guys have found?
Absolutely. You know, because, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're teaching some breathing, some, you know, the physical touch things that you can do, whatever works for you to get you, you know, yeah, down and, but simple things that take seconds, you know, that don't, you know, I don't need to meditate for 30 minutes before I go to this. To right. get to that, but really seconds to try to bring that down. And I said this before, I'm a firm believer in this, getting this to the conscious thought, to recognize that I'm starting to have a strong emotional response, whether it be fight or flight or fear or whatever. I'm starting to have a really strong emotional response to that, recognizing that as a conscious thought, not just a reaction. And then so I can start to mitigate that and start to navigate it into, again, it's not going to make it go away. And honestly, in our job, fear is not a bad thing. It makes you sharp, you know, on something. Yes. But it's when you get to that point where it's just, you can't do anything else, you know, the fight, flight, or freeze syndrome, your tunnel vision. I'm very narrowly focused. So to be able to do that, I think, and again, like you said, get ahead of it. So your baseline's not way up high, your baseline's down lower. And so you're starting with that lower baseline. And again, if it gets tense, you're actually starting at a lower level. So,
yeah. Well, here's what's interesting, just as an aside. I have a client who we do regular work for, and the senior leader, you know, I always found him to be sort of a pro EQ type person. But it kind of grew without me knowing to the level of where it was like, I want you here and I want them to hear this. And then he makes an announcement in front of this group that he had been to his doctor, I guess, 6 months ago. And his doctor pretty much said, yeah, we're going to have to do something about this blood pressure. It's just not okay for you to be at this level. And I had introduced to them around that same time, this idea of the pause, you know, and you've heard it before, Jeremy. I know you have, Jeff, you know, pause 6 seconds, allow all those chemical hormones and peptides to come down, and then you position the prefrontal to take over, blah, 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 blah. And he tried it. And he goes back to the doctor, and his doctor's like, I don't know what you've been doing, but you need to keep doing it. And this guy's on top of the world because he's going, this works. And I remember hearing that come out of him. And I think that describes the longing that we have, that people can experience something, you know. It's kind of like back to what you said, Jeff, you actually, the breath work, and you're seeing results. I mean, you want that for those that you serve.
Well, when we talk about this, I think we kind of have a tendency to look at EQ, all this stuff, with how it's going to affect the other person. But I think we're looking at it backwards. It needs to be, how does it affect me first?
It has to start there. And that's interesting. You bring that up because, you know, and you brought up earlier that we're doing this citywide, and that's the one thing we're really, really focusing on. It has to start with us first. And we're government. We're very good at outward focus. We're not really good at inward focus. And so we're really starting to look at that and say it has to start with you. And you have to, because if you're not well or healthy, or it has a direct impact on the people we serve. It definitely does. And so to be able to, for us to recognize, and the other part of it is communicate effectively with each other. You know, what we saw when everybody came back into the workplace after COVID in our organization was, and this is the city, not just the police department. We obviously were here during it, right. Was that they had trouble communicating with each other because of it. And the communication had a lot of emotional response to it. And we do a whole section on, you know, typed messaging versus the nonverbals that we see here. But yeah. But that's what so we did a lot of that. And again, going back to what are you bringing to the table with us? You know, because the natural reaction is to go to the other person. It's the other person, the other person, the other person, the other person. But what are you bringing to this and recognizing what your own emotional intelligence is or where you're at with it? Maybe you need to learn from it. Maybe, again, you need to develop into this. And so then we get some skills that we can help them work on.
And Jeremy, you know, you just hit on something, and it'll be probably a good segue to our next question. But, you know, the idea that when we face the various problems and opportunities of a day, right? And the idea that when we immediately remove the spotlight from ourselves onto other people, other things, other situations, right? And I was in this conversation yesterday. The person's, you know, talking about, you know, I've tried this and this doesn't work, and that person. And I remember in that conversation saying, have they gotten to the root of it? You know, have you gotten to the root of why this issue continues to come back to, and you're encountering it? Because until you deal with that, it's really just kind of a circling of the airport, right? Or chasing your tail, maybe, is the better way of saying it. And I get it. People can be afraid to go to that place, to the answer to this. Is to your point earlier, Jeremy, what am I bringing to the table? And being able to go, you know what? What I'm bringing to the table is an argument that I had with my dad a week ago, and I'm still pissed, and he's not budging. But I brought it here now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are in a psychologically safe environment, if you have a culture, I would believe that their response would be, well, that's really, I'm sorry to hear that about your dad. You want, what's going on there? Is that something you want to talk about? I mean, because Jeremy, and I know you know this, and Jeff, we've talked about it, seems like probably a million times. If we go into these situations with the idea that it's the trees, when in reality it's the sidewalk, we're not going to get anywhere. And I got to believe that when it comes to the community. So let me pivot. If you had to look out and see what impact the EQ work that you guys are doing is having on the community in Dubuque, any observations around that? Any examples of how do you think the impact is there?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's twofold. So, I mean, internally, we're seeing that, because I think you just nailed a point where internally, like, you know, people are talking, or if they're saying, what's wrong with you? Or, you know, they start talking, hey, what's wrong with them? Now they're going more to that. Again, you know, how you phrase that matters, right? Yeah. So you go back into it and say, you know, hey, I noticed that you seem to be a little bit off. You know, or something bothering you, just kind of pick something up. Am I right on that? You know, that just changed how that cold question. And then you see that nonverbals of, yeah, you know, me and my dad had a fight, you know, and so that's internally. Externally, I think that plays into that also, because then you start to see where, what I think we start to see is, and I'll go back to the, again, I talked a lot about our self-management and our own awareness of what we're doing with that, but I think there is an empathy part, you know, and we also talk about, you know, well, 6 seconds, we'll talk about the noble goals, you know, your purpose in life, right? And to understand why are you really doing what you're doing? You know, we're in that, what they call the noble profession, noble goal, kind of makes sense, right? And so, you know, really, why are you doing what you're doing, to really evaluate that? You know, and I think that's something we're asking. So then you approach it a little bit different, right? You have a little different mindset to say, you know, this is really something that I felt that I was called to. What I really want, you know, when we do hiring, if you ask that question, why do you want to get this? I want to protect and serve, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gets jaded after a while. And I think we need to stay, and that's part of the EQ side is bringing that back around. Why are you really doing what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Do you really enjoy helping people? And, you know, and I think what we see is, again, as what plays out with the citizens part of that or the community in general is that we're able to get our officers to use it. I'm doing this for the right reason. I'm using empathy. Even though I'm arresting you, I'm using empathy. You know, I'm not, we're taking the personal side of that out, it being like, I take it personal that you offended me because you did a crime. I'm doing it more so. And I think the second would then starts playing into other components, because as you start to use the empathy, you look, okay, jail might not be the best option. So now we're starting to look at, okay, you have a serious brain health problem. And our job isn't to determine what their diagnosis is, but it's like, our job is that we don't get repeat offenders, right? And right. So it's better that we can get you the brain health help there. So this bleeds into that, which is a big topic, you know, and we espouse that as part of our brain health side of that too, is look at that and see if we can, maybe it is go to jail and get brain health. It's not an or, but is there a better service here that we're not seeing them as a repeat customer? And then when we're dealing with somebody at the lowest of lows, and to recognize that. So I use an example of, you know, you work a busy Saturday night and after the fifth drunk, you're tired of drunks. Even though it's the nicest drunk, it's the microaggression, and the fifth drunk gets to you. And now you're just worked up because I'm tired of dealing with drunks. And you take it out on this person that's actually nice. So starting to do that to say, you know, recognize that there is microaggressions that go into this, you know, the other five drunks that were just a pain, and now yeah. You got the one that's decent, but they're getting the brunt of the other five. So I think there's a community effect to that to say that, hey, you know what, we're not doing that, you know.
You know what's interesting, Jeremy, and Jeff, I'll let you jump in as well. I was on the road this morning. I was meeting someone for coffee, and I'm on a freeway system, and this I think goes to the recognizing patterns idea, right? Or the tool of it. I have a Honda, I think it was an SUV that was right on my rear end, right? And at first I looked and I'm going, okay, they're probably, you know, kind of just, they moved into the lane. They're just there. They're probably going to back off, you know, recognize that they're right on my tail, but they didn't. And I can start to feel a little bit of my irritation. And then I kind of shifted and going, I wonder what they're doing. I wonder, is there going to be a pattern here? And a pattern started to develop because they were still on my tail, moving high rate of speed. And they kind of moved like they were going to get into the left lane for speed to go around me. But they did it. But then they came back, Jeremy, and stayed there. And then I'm starting to pick up this communication, right? And obviously, as you know, and our audience knows, I couldn't read the driver's mind. I don't know what they were thinking or what was going on, right? But I could see a pattern. And the pattern helped me to move from, what a jerk. What do you get off my rear end? Oh my gosh, right? To, I wonder what could be going on. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I'm thinking about America 2023. Unable to or no tools to manage the emotions. The person might see my car as the object of their anger from a confrontation, an argument that happened 3 hours ago. And I look at that and I go, that potentially is the community that you guys, and in our case, the Columbus Police Department, are dealing with every day. And if it does, it does create a bit of empathy, because I could have I could have escalated that thing, as you know. I mean, I got to believe there are accidents that happen on the highways, freeways in your area that it occurred because you were riding my tail. All right, I'm going to slam on my brakes because I'm pissed that you. Do you see where I'm going there, yeah. Jeff? I mean, and Jeremy as well.
Yeah. And that's the part with the policing is you use that, you know, you go into a situation where somebody is having a bad day. I mean, you think about it. We generally don't get called to people having a good day, you know. And so, and it's like, hey, come on over, you know. And there's some of that, to be honest. And another whole part of that is relish that when that happens. But you know,
right?
There's where it happens, they're having a bad day, and it, you know, your bad day, like your example, will exasperate that situation if you bring that into it, or you change it into the you know, it's a think, feel, act. I change the thought on it. I wonder what's going on with them, you know, and that changes your feeling on it, changes you from anger, you know, to the, and now my actions are, I'm not going to slam on my brakes, you know, and same thing with the officers going into it, where, you know, if they go into these situations with it and somebody's yelling, you know, we were taught historically, you know, calm down, you need to calm down, just calm down. If you don't calm down, you're going to go to jail. You need to quiet down. You got to talk to me civilly. To me now, looking back on this, it's mind blowing. It's like, that never worked. Well, duh, it doesn't work. Because, you know, and then that's the part that's, you know, where you go into it and it's like, let them, and then listen to what they're saying. Because if you're listening hard and you change the thought, maybe you pick up on it. It really has nothing to do with this or that or whatever. You know, when an officer goes in and they start to take that personal, that they're taking it out on them, it exasperates it. Now start listening and it's like, okay. Really, the crux is you're yelling at me, but you're really mad at your kid.
Yeah. And Jeremy and Jeff as well. I mean, that little interaction lasted for about 15 seconds. All right. And that's not an applause for me. It just, to me, it speaks to the power of this work, that even in 15 seconds interactions, there's some things that we can do. And I say this to our clients all the time, is that in the beginning, this idea of pausing for 6 seconds, in the beginning, breath work, in the beginning, mindfulness, it's all going to be very clunky, you know? And I think even the example, I always use some kind of sports analogy. So first time that Joe Burrow, the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, picked up the football, it was clunky. His dad probably had to tell him, move your hands a little bit to the right. No, your feet. You've got to move your feet a little bit further. But eventually he got to a place when he got to the line, it was boom, 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 boom. And that's kind of my naive hope that people can get to a place where, oh, this is happening. All right. Think, feel, act, right?
And yeah, and the funny thing, you don't think about it.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right. And I think, well, this work takes practice. We know that. You know, you have to practice it. You can't just learn it, you know, and say, okay, great, I got that at a conference and go on, and then I'll use it when I need it. It doesn't work that way. You have to use it to where it becomes that part of you just start to do it. You know, and you don't think about it. You start thinking, I wonder, you change it to the inquisitive side. I wonder what's going on there. Why are they tailgating me? That's weird. You know, but that's a great point, because that's what we're trying to do. Again, we're not just giving you some knowledge that you apply. You need to work at this, and you really have to essentially live it. And it's not just at work. It's at home. You got to do it all the time. It's amazing how you can use this stuff, like on my kids and different things, and with my wife, and how you use some of this. And it's like some of the EQ coaching stuff, using some of the powerful questions. It's amazing how this stuff works if you actually start to use it. So,
yeah. Jeff, I'm going to give you that opportunity. Go ahead.
Okay. We were talking about empathy, and I'm going to, I think I mentioned maybe before on, we have a neighbor that's a City of Columbus police officer. And then I have another friend that I've known for a long, long time, that fireman, paramedic, EMT, you know, all the stuff. And I've talked with them when they've had a horrible thing that they dealt with. The police officer basically had a victim, young 8-9-year-old kid, die in her arms from a drive-by. The other fellow, you know, he would talk about, you know, bad accident scenes, dealing with dead people, you know, horrible things that happened. And we've both talked about it. And I've talked to both of them, is a better way to say it. but about self-empathy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much you guys talk about that with the officers, because you know, I don't know how they handle going from this situation, which is, you know, a heartbreaking thing, and are able to do it. Is that something that, you know, if an officer says, hey, I need an hour, or mm-hmm. something like that, is that something that you would encourage officers to think about?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's because self-empathy gets lost in the empathy, right? And I think in my world, it really does. You know, I go back to where I became aware of this is years ago, we had a major situation going on here, and I was doing a lot of empathy for everybody else in the building. I happened to do an assessment, and my empathy was way, way low. And I'm like, I don't understand it. Well, we all know Jim Vave, and Jim says to me, he goes, how much are you giving yourself? And I'm like, none. And he's like, there you go. And so I learned about empathy buckets. And so that's one thing we're trying to, you know, with the officers, again, you got to give yourself some, yeah, you can recognize that situation sucked, you know, and I think that's one thing we did not do. We have not done historic. It's like, move on to the next thing, you know, push it down, bury it, stay that stoic, you know, deal with it later. Well, it just keeps getting pushed down. And so to be able to say that this sucked, and you know what, I'm not feeling real good about this. You know, I need some things, you know, and I do encourage that, and I encourage officers to say that. And I think in peers and command staff would say, you know, somebody's really, and I think they're recognizing it with each other too, to say, you know, even if somebody doesn't say it, you're not, something's going on. Why don't you take a minute or take an hour or take what you need to do that? And the other part of that is to have the ability for somebody to fall in wherever that is. So we have multi-layers. We have traditional command staff, that route. We have employee assistance. We have a chaplain program. We have peer support. We have a partnership with one of our local psychologists. We have a number of avenues that we want to be able to give people that ability to work on themselves too. And again, not shove it down. It pops up 10 years later, and now you're trying to figure out what was that cause, or, you know, and trying to address it in the moment. So, yeah.
You know, I might be wrong, but I think one of the most powerful ways would be the partner that's riding with you in the car going, you can we talk, you know?
Yeah. And there is a lot of that going on. I know that goes on. I know our peer support is confidential. I don't know what they do, who they talk to, or what. I know they get used a lot. That's all I know is that there, but I know that that's just a number where it's kind of formal. I know this informal stuff, they're out on the street, and I know they're doing it. I hear it, because I think part of the culture change is to get officers to say that, you know what, I was at a bad spot there, and so-and-so, I was able to talk to so-and-so and they helped me, you know. I just did a promotional assessment, so outside third party doing these promotional assessments, and they were amazed at how transparent my officers were about situations and how they felt. And, you know, I was at the low of lows, but, you know, this is what I've done with it. I had support in talking about the support and what I did with that. And I think that's, you know, to me, that makes me feel good, because I think that's what our goal was, to try to get that total transparency where it's not building and it just drags us all down when that happens.
So, Jeremy, when we think about other police departments, and I brought that up a little earlier, you know, for me, I could say to myself, well, my gosh, if they listen to this podcast, they're going to see what benefits and how it can help. But I got to believe there's also going to be some element of, well, you don't understand how our city manager, you don't understand our, you know, city council, or whatever the case may be. What advice would you give to maybe another chief who listens to this and says, I get it, but what kind of advice would you give them if they want to kind of, you know, in some way have a level of adoption of EQ that may not be formally embraced, or maybe even how do you navigate a city manager or a city council?
Yeah. It starts with, you're already doing it. It's already happening. We're just not calling it EQ. Whether it be, you know, we touted that officer that could go out and talk to people. Man, they can talk to anybody. And that person, my goodness, you know, and that's EQ. And so it's happening. So to look at what's already happening with that, caring about each other, you know, in law enforcement, we have that strong culture of we got each other's backs, we care for each other, the thin blue line, all that. But it's not just physically, it's mentally we got to take care of each other too. So that's happening. It's happening organically. Like you said, partners on the street, that happens pretty much every day. Yeah. Now, I'm saying is don't do it as, hey, let's go out to the bar and get drunk, because that's not it's a short-term fix to a long-term problem, right? And so we can do some things to make it more, we can introduce some skill. It's not, you know, when we introduced it here, it was kind of funny because people were like, oh, touchy-feely, and make jokes about it, you know, and yeah, of course we're going to do that. We're going to sing Kumbaya. We're going to do this. And they even make fun of the mindfulness and breathing, but they're doing it. So it's kind of that thing. Yeah, it may look corny, but it keeps you out of jail. How's that sound? You know, that's not a bad thing. And so that's kind of the mantra we use. Now to start addressing that with the culture of it, again, you don't have to go in and say, here's the program, because that's hard. We're doing that with the city right now. Here's our program. They're hard because it's hard to do an EQ program, so to speak. It's more as it's to get the individual skill sets and to get some of that. And just if it's simply, we started back in 2008 with just who are you? Who are your people? And how do you see the world? That we just started with those questions just to kind of say, you know, recognize who I am. You can start that simple. The other part is you get city councils and that. I don't know how any elected component would be upset with your police department being nice and your police department really trying to serve the community. I'll just say it. They're whack if they're saying that and what they want you to do. So, I mean, to go in and say, you know, we're going to do, and everybody knows de-escalation. Everybody knows duty to intervene. That became national primetime spotlight. So we're doing this. Now here's the skills that you need to bring on the individual side. Again, I can teach you how to de-escalate, but recognize that I got to de-escalate myself before I can de-escalate somebody else. So,
yeah, because to your point, Jeremy, and we try to communicate this, you know, from the perspective that let's not think of this as some, to your point, a program. Let's think about we're introducing tools for you to use when you encounter these various problems and opportunities of a given day. And when we think of it that way, then it becomes less of a, oh my gosh, here's another program, or oh my gosh, we've got to talk about the budget. And I just think maybe simplifying it sometimes, to your point, how you just described you're already doing it, is a great way to sort of open our mind up to, and we never take the approach of, well, you know, this is going to take about 12 months to start, and then you've got to do this step, and then we've got to jump through this hoop. I mean, we've kind of communicated, hey, if your starting point is, can you come and just do a quick presentation on what this is? Oh, we're there. We can do that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the next step is, well, what would it look like if we did something quarterly? And then maybe the next step after that is, well, what if we started with the assessments and getting debriefs and all that? I just think that there is this, there can be a built-in reluctance because they think that they've got to move this giant mountain in a day.
Right. You know, and everybody wants metrics. So they want data. What is the success of this? I think it's a lot harder to measure than you really will know. Again, because how do you measure that we're on a first name basis? You know, how do you measure those things that, those little things like that? Or the next time I do it, you know, because we had talked, we actually had a conversation and we learned a little bit about each other last time. You can't measure that. Where you get it is as you start to listen, and also, you know what, they used to be so mad at me. And I give my own personal examples with people. There's a gentleman I meet with monthly, and we used to chase each other around as you know, when I was a young officer and he was young running the streets, and we joke about that now, because now we're just like, you know, we talk to each other and it's like, oh my gosh, remember all this and how silly we were, and you know, and be able to say, you know, you know, this is what I felt back then. This is what I felt. You know, I thought you're a cop and you're just trying to get me. And I thought you were just a little hellion and trying to do this, you know? And so
right.
That's the stuff that we're really trying to, I think that's the stuff we can't measure. So as you talk about it, how do you bring this into an organization where it's tough or somebody doesn't want it? Again, I don't think people necessarily don't want it. They just don't know how to do it. Some of it's our training. Some of it, you know, you're taught not to get emotionally attached. Problem is that, you know, we know that when somebody says they don't have emotions, it's a lie. You know, and everybody has emotions to a degree. It's just what you're doing with them, and just recognize it. And like I said, it's as simple as name it to tame it. I mean, I use that because I use it a lot, but it's that simple. Right. And we know there's research that says you write it down, say it out loud, tell somebody else, it mitigates the effect of that emotion. There's all kinds of that. So they used to be able to say, yeah, that situation sucked, or I couldn't. That bothered me when they did that. I mean, that in and of itself will start moving that needle.
Yeah. So do you think that if there's again, maybe it's not the chief of police of the Columbus Police Department, but if there's a suburban police department that's smaller that says, wow, I like the things that you're talking about, Jeremy, I get it. So what do you think is a good next step for me? What maybe would you say to them?
I would say, just look at what you're doing already and then, and just say, okay, what do we need? You know, and some of it is listening to, you know, what do we need? Yeah, we need better communication among each other. We know internally what some of the stuff is and how to better communication. The community wants to, you know, they feel like the officers are, you know, standoffish. They're not approachable, you know, and we did some things physically over the years, you know, community policing, put people on bikes, more approachable. That stuff works to a degree.
Yeah.
It still takes, there's still a person involved there. So now there's another step to that, and to recognizing that, you know, that our officers are, you know, just to say, yeah, our community wants that. So how do we do that? Well, let's start meeting with each other, not just police community, meet each other as on that first. And I'll use that over and over, that first name basis. Don't meet each other as the police officer and the community member or police or whatever. We're literally just meeting on a first name basis. Jeremy and Eric, we're just meeting. And yeah. That's where it starts.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, as always, time can be a conspirator and cause us to have to cut short and all that. But Jeff, any last thoughts from you or questions for Jeremy?
It's just, like I said earlier, it's just really exciting to see how emotional intelligence can make a difference in anything. But, you know, when we're dealing with, you know, police officers in high stress situations, how that it makes a difference then, that it's more than just trying to think of the right way to say it. It's something that happens in the moment, and which is what, I mean, police officers live in the moment.
Yeah. And Jeff and Jeremy, I think you'd appreciate this. This was probably, I don't know, maybe a month ago, one of the things that's happening here in Columbus, there have been a lot more of shootings on the freeway, you know, with automobile interactions. And this one particular case, the gentleman shot another gentleman because it was a road rage situation. And I think about that, what you said, Jeff, about in the moment. I know that we can't get to every citizen in the community and explain to them how powerful it can be if you just give it 5 or 6 seconds before you decide that you're going to do this thing, this reaction, right? And the police are on the responding end of something that happened and they weren't even there. It wasn't a community policing interaction. But I gotta believe, you know, that officer or those officers that show up and are and seeing the result of it, because it's so prevalent, not just in our area, but all around the country. And I just applaud what you guys are doing there in Dubuque. And obviously we've used you guys as examples of how it can be done. And how, you know, again, it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean you've got to move a mountain tomorrow type situation, but it does leave me with the optimism that even in the face of some really tough situations, there are some answers that can be addressed. Jeremy, thank you so much again for carving out time for us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I can talk about this all day. So,
well, you know what? And Jeff, this will be our bell ringing that we'll have Jeremy back in 24. How about that? So we don't wait for 2 years to pass by. How about that? That's great. Well, everyone out there, our audience, we really do appreciate you tuning in and listening, and we appreciate it. And we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric again. A couple of things as we've ended the show. We hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully, you're tuning in on a regular basis. We'd love it if you would give us a great review on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast. It's so appreciative and helps us as we try to get more exposure for the work we do and the episodes that we publish. And we're grateful to you as a listener. The second thing is, just remember, our content is for educational purposes only. It's not intended by any stretch to diagnose or to treat anything that may be occurring in your life or anyone else's life that you may be connected to through the podcast. But once again, we appreciate you tuning in to the shows. And as always, we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.